coming up with the outlier piece of it, because as I saw in this, in the article, you were talking about, you know, it's about this prestige. Well, why the real reason it, you know, the struggle and challenges for online education. And so it was, yeah, mentioned, right? It was, hey, it's a prestige thing. Hey, it really comes down to cost. It's about the right environment, you know? And so when you were laying these things out, I'm like, this is the same thing that now everybody's trying to figure out. You know, it wasn't just something, it wasn't just Aaron Rasmussen coming up with Masterclass. Everybody was trying to come up with, how do you do this? You know, the whole state of Washington is trying to figure out how to come up with Masterclass instead of just, you know, people and instructors that were, you know, not comfortable sitting in front of a camera, you know, that weren't comfortable having a small session. Those that were introverts now are completely introverts. So how do you pull those individuals out, get the one-on-one experiences you're going through? And you see that everybody is dealing with, I think, what you have found a way to make a connection with, which I think is pretty impressive.
It's funny because, you know, we started well before the pandemic. Yeah. So I was just that crazy person being like, we have to do this. Let's all make college cheaper. And people are like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, no, I swear this is important. And now everybody's like, so tell us your thoughts on college.
Welcome to the Leadership Experience Podcast, where we seek to build connections, talk relevant issues about warfighting, and share professional knowledge through experience and lessons learned with guests from a variety of different professional backgrounds. It's our way to relate to multiple generations within our formation and create real conversations as we build a team of teams committed to winning and dedicated to the pursuit of excellence. We hope you enjoy our content. You can continue to find the Lancer Brigade on Facebook and Instagram, and find our podcast content on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts as you search for the Lancer Brigade or the Leadership Experience. Enjoy. Hey team, check it out. Today we welcome Mr. Aaron Rasmussen. Mr. Rasmussen is the co-founder of Masterclass, an online learning platform created for students of all skills being taught by professional and celebrity instructors who are the best in their field. He has since founded Outlier.org, a startup that allows students to take online classes for college credit. His contributions today will cover his balance of personal pursuits and his love of his craft, as well as the willingness to take risk by flipping the philosophy of education. All right. Hey, Aaron, thanks for taking the time and sit down and having a conversation with our team today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I was wondering, before we kick off, if you could share, based on everything that's going on amidst this, among this pandemic, you know, what has been recent, any type of changes with any of the business ventures that you're currently going through?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably pretty obvious that there's a huge need for online education at this point. My last couple of ventures have been in that area. We've seen a 7x increase on our summer term. Oh, wow. Since the pandemic at Outlier.org. And, you know, it's just become really clear, this whole conversation has shifted from does online education work to how can it work? And the thing that's been really exciting for us is that we are posting success rates that are equivalent to in-person courses. And I think that sort of puts to rest the question of, can this work? And what's great is once that's answered and, you know, we're at statistical significance with it now, it means that anyone gets access to education anywhere. It's not geographically locked. It's not chronologically locked. We're hoping to break down a lot of the economic barriers. You know, our $400 price point goes a long way to do that. But, you know, I'm from Eastern Oregon myself. So $400 would really been too much for me back then. So we're hoping to figure out, you know, clever ways to, whether it's provide scholarships or what have you, but really make education as accessible as possible.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. So, you know, when you started this venture, and we'll talk more about, you know, outliers.org, but, you know, for those that are familiar with you in the past, being the co-founder of Masterclass, and that was absolutely something that's, you know, really tapping into the, you know, what we call kind of being a lifelong student in your profession. And so a lot of times, just in what we're doing here, it's meeting individuals that are pursuing their craft, you know, tapping into things and another way of looking at some key things in leadership. And for those that are truly kind of masters of what they're doing, it's asking and finding out, you know, what principles do they live and they use to guide what they're pursuing. inspirations, who's your network of resources, and how do you kind of game into that portion of it? So, it's interesting when you went through this, I know education is a big portion of it right now. But when you started this, and I know you've talked a little bit about, these current conditions with COVID, do you see it, and what's the end state? And I know that you're going to talk a little bit about, the outliers.org piece, but what is the end state that you hope to change when it comes to the landscape with education?
Big question. The landscape that I want to change with it is really, in many ways, reducing student debt. The second you can make it more affordable to go to college, the more opportunity somebody has to choose the major that they want to be in, to choose the job that they want to be in after college. It just unlocks so many opportunities for individual lives. And I think that's phenomenal. Now with MasterClass, it was really, what a fun thing to be able to do. In many ways, you're doing sort of a similar thing that I got to do, which is just ask people, how does it work? How do you do what you do? And in many ways, that was a product that, my co-founder and I just wanted to exist for ourselves. We're like, hey, why can't everyone learn from the best people in the world? So one of the things that, I got serious about was, what does that look like? And what it looks like is 100 years from now, I want there to be a group of people, preferably MasterClass, going around collecting the knowledge of the world's best and making it accessible to everyone, democratizing access to genius. And then what I would also say is, look, the work that we're doing today, I want to be relevant in 100 years. Because when you look back, let's say it's 2120, and you look back and you say, who was the greatest singer of the beginning of the millennium? And Christina Aguilera's name is going to be on there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be amazing because there's going to be an asterisk next to it that says, and she tried to pass on her craft. And here's this masterclass. That sort of thing is timeless. And I think that we've lost a lot of knowledge in humanity because we kind of didn't get to this soon enough. We didn't really need the internet to do it. You could have done it sort of with books, but a lot of times it's been something that people sort of self-selected for, either it's Ray Bradbury writing about writing or Stephen King. But then what you find is, Leonardo da Vinci had an apprentice and they actually found a second Mona Lisa recently. It's called Prada's Mona Lisa. Mm. And it's totally amazing because it is the Mona Lisa, but from a slightly different angle. And all right, give me one second here. I'm sort of into repairing things recently. This is my old mic stand from when I used to play in a band. And I went to the hardware store and sort of bolted it all back together. And I would say it's 90% working. So basically, we know that Leonardo da Vinci had an apprentice, and we don't even know their name. Somebody got to spend time with one of the greatest minds in history, and it didn't really go anywhere. So if we can give that experience to tons of people, you can imagine how many people can benefit from that experience. So that's the ultimate, goal with MasterClass. And I'm really proud of what we accomplished there in setting up a group of people that are good at capturing this knowledge, making it accessible. If you can find one little bit of knowledge in a chapter that kind of just changes your perspective and allows you to do something new in your career, it's extraordinarily valuable. And I can think of a million.
Yeah, that's examples.
It's very relevant to being in the profession of arms. We talk about this journey in the profession of arms. It's really got this dual character in nature, because of the size of the military, there's a lot of bureaucratic procedures and processes because it's so large. And then the other half of it is this leadership aspect of this. And so, exactly what you're talking about, moving along this journey in the profession of arms is what we call becoming a steward, to really pay it forward. So, when we were talking about how is another way, and really under the conditions that we currently are facing, where you have the challenges with social distancing, but how do you make this connection? And a lot of times,
you know, when you're in a relation or you're in a an organization that has three or four different types of generations, it's also a little bit of a challenge on how you connect. And, you know, my son was the one that kind of, you know, sat back with me and he said, "Hey, Dad," he goes, he's 16 years old. He's like, "Our generation doesn't want to be talked at, but we want to be part of the conversation." And so we started to think through, how could we do this? Could we find individuals, you know, that were more exciting than me, maybe share a story and something that they heard, they gleaned some type of gem, you know, and whether it's a principle, something about work ethic, about values, and really a leadership gem that somebody along the line could then take that and then use that to apply forward. Or just, and it's just great stories and ventures so far about resiliency and grit, you know, individuals we call masters of our craft, which are really those that have served, you know, prior war fighters that have shared their experiences, and really what we talk students of our profession. So, you know, individuals like yourself that have gone on all these different ventures that can share their experiences when it comes to creativity, innovation, understanding and taking risk, and then how do you build these teams as you're going through. So when I was doing some research and then I came across a lot of the great things you did, it does draw a similar parallel of what we're trying to do here in the profession of arms.
Awesome. I think that's such a, I'm very excited to hear as you continue to do these and hear, you know, what everyone has to sort of say, because there are so many lessons. You know, it's funny. I think about lessons I learned from video games, you know, as a kid, and you learn some of your first lessons in leadership from video games. And, you know, I used to play Counter-Strike a lot. And I remember this crazy moment where, you know, I was probably about 14 and I was really good. And people would listen to me because I was number one. And I'd be like, "Go here, do that, et cetera." And then as I kind of got older, I didn't really have enough time to play. And I was pretty middle of the pack, if not towards the back. And we'd lose because people weren't leading. We were just this like disparate array of running around shooting things. And I was like, you know what? I'm not number one, but somebody's got to do something here. So I just tried telling people what to do. It's like, okay, you got an A site, you got a B site, et cetera, we'll fake here, double back. And they listened and we won. And this was literally the first time I realized that leadership is about leadership, not being the best at what the people you're doing. It's about being great at leadership, not about being great at the thing that the people you're leading are doing, right? Like that for me was this huge unlock. I was like, oh my God, I don't need to become phenomenal at everything, but I do need to become phenomenal at making people comfortable in me giving direction. And it's showing them that this is successful. And it was just a really important lesson for me. And then that compounds, right? As soon as you sort of unlock that, you realize that good leading, a lot of the times, is following, right? It's supporting someone because you're trying to accomplish the goals of an organization. And sometimes, you know, we think of the leader sort of as being out front. There's this concept of, you know, leading from behind. So when you herd goats, it's actually a lot easier to lead them from behind. And you're getting them to go where you want them to go, but it doesn't look maybe the same way as somebody sort of running out in front in a, I guess, a herd of goats running behind them. It's a very strange analogy. So there were a lot of early experiences. I made so many mistakes. I mean, my first company was a robotics company. You know, I have a dubious sort of record of being the person who invented the world's first sentry gun that was functional. You know, I ultimately didn't pursue that and ended up building an industrial robotics company. My robots still run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week around the world. And I didn't know a lot about management. It's something that I had to learn. And I had to learn that leadership and management are different.
Absolutely.
There are great leaders that are not good managers. This stuff is probably obvious to a lot of people. And I have found, you know, I growing up in Eastern Oregon, a lot of your friends join the military, sometimes get the GI Bill, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, to talk about somebody who's inspired to get a college degree. You know what I mean? It's like, that is a commitment. That is a commitment. But, you know, I think these lessons come through pretty quickly in that environment. But you know, I went straight into business. So I didn't really work for anyone else before that. I worked some jobs in college, et cetera. And wow, do I recommend working for someone else? You learn what's good, what's bad, you know, who you want to be, what type of character traits you want to present, and what you don't want to be. And I think it, you know, probably slowed me down a little bit. And it took me a couple years longer than I needed to really understand how important it is to build that great company culture and, you know, work with people that you care about. It's the easiest thing in the world to manage somebody that you care about, because you want their career to be great. You want them to be the best possible version of themselves. When people are like, oh, I hate managing, I'm like, ah, you've never worked with somebody who you actually want to work with.
I think that you've highlighted so many great little, you know, pieces in there just about being a leader and going through leader development. I think the point about being a great follower, you know, when you come in as a soldier, you go through the ropes and understand. We assign you a sergeant, a team leader. Do as I do. Make your uniform look like me. You know, make your equipment look like me. And so you have these great examples of what right looks like. You know, and that's one of the great things about the profession of arms. But I think that key moment you mentioned, you know, and for a lot of listeners, we do have those in our soldiers that are very fond of video games. And so as you were kind of describing your own Leroy Jenkins moment, you know, sometimes you've got to lead from the front, you know, but at other times when you realize that you are not, you don't necessarily have the talent to run out and, you know, lead from the front every time, you have to be the leader that demonstrates that you can communicate directly and tell individuals what you need to do. And so when they start to see the things unfold, that's when you start saying, wow, I am the one that placed certain individuals and helped provide some direction and guidance. And then as you mentioned, right, you're highlighting the purpose of why we are going to be doing certain things. And it's kind of the beginnings of, you know, recognizing, hey, I might be pretty decent at this. And you start to learn like, hey, there is no, you know, there is no patent there on leadership. And so how do I seek this knowledge? How do I gain this experience? How do I find other individuals that have done very well leading crisis, you know, understanding how to manage and mitigate risk? So I think a lot of the things you mentioned are very applicable to what our team kind of goes through at this point. I was wondering, you know, since you brought up, there's a couple of things I think I could glean from some stories that I read in the past. So I read that, you know, you mentioned that you were involved in video games as early in, you know, your teen years and then growing up. And then for the team that's listening, I know that they may not be familiar, but you were actually involved in developing video games. And what I understand is that when you were growing up and you were in chemistry class, you actually had an accident that was an inspiration to the video game that you developed, Blindside. I was wondering if you could share that with us.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the upsides to growing up in the country is you get to do basically whatever you want. You know, you're like firing bottle rockets out of a street sign tube that you found, and park rangers show up and they're just like, well, don't catch anything on fire. And we're like, okay. And they're like, and put the signs back where you found them when you're done. You know, it's like this sort of thing. Well, the downside is none of us were wearing goggles in chemistry. And I mixed potassium chlorate and red phosphorus and just took a direct hit, blinded myself in both eyes, burned this whole side of my face. I didn't think I'd ever have facial hair. I didn't think I'd ever see again. And, you know, it was horrible. I was 15 at the time. And, you know, it's a hard thing to deal with, to think you're never going to see again. It's a hard thing to wake up blind and not know where you are. But also, you know, it gave me a lot of perspective. Now, I ultimately got my vision back. They didn't think it would happen because I just didn't think enough of my corneas were left. And, you know, I think it's because I was so young, it regrew. But, you know, it left me, unfortunately, with PTSD for quite some time. And I couldn't handle ammunition for a long time. And I couldn't go into a chemistry lab. So I was going to go to school for chemistry. And that was the end of that career. I'm actually so excited about doing a chemistry class at Outlier because I'm through the PTSD stuff. It's like flashbacks.
That's great.
And now I get to finally take college chemistry. Like, part of doing these things is I love learning. I love to be able to do this. So basically, you know, I ended up going into advertising and then getting a computer science degree as well. You know, I had scars on my hands and stuff for a long time, but in general, everything regrew. And, you know, my uncle is blind from diabetes. And he was like, you should write something about being blind and recovering your sight and what that feels like. And I, you know, wasn't comfortable writing at the time. So I wrote a script for like a video game that had no visuals. So it was all audio, which is about waking up blind and not knowing what's happening. And I kind of like didn't really think more about this. Then my buddy, Michael Stolfi, was getting his master's in game design. And we were just like having brunch or something in New York. And I, you know, he was like, oh, there's this really cool game that, you know, doesn't have visuals by Deep Sea by Robin Arnott. And I was like, oh yeah, like I did this thing. And he's like, what? That sounds amazing. You should send it to me. And I'm like, oh God, I haven't looked at it in years. Like I don't, and he's like, Aaron, just send me the stupid thing. So I send it to him. 24 hours later, he sends me a demo of the game. I mean, that was so quick turnaround. Now it's all gray blocks, right? So it's basically when you're first making a video game, all you're trying to do is get the gameplay in. Doesn't have to look good. You're just trying to figure out, is this fun? And sure enough, I play it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this totally works. It's a fully 3D world. And it feels like being blind. And I, so he and I ended up just being like, let's do it. Let's just make a weird art project. It was really helpful for me and kind of putting a sort of an endpoint on when that caused me so many problems, you know, that experience, just saying like, okay, you know, I own this now, right? Like I can talk about it. I can, you know, be around fire. I can handle ammunition. It's fine. So, that was really great. Now it turns out a lot of people liked it. So we ended up becoming a finalist at IndieCade. We got to go to a red carpet event at Lose. So that was interesting. We won some other awards. We won the Games for Change Innovation Award. This led to developing one of the first five games for Oculus Rift at E3 that year, because we saw an Oculus Rift that, you know, people knew us from the IndieCade circus and circuit, and they're like, hey, can you develop something for E3? You know, we'll give you some free Rifts if you do it. And it's such a good example of just do the weird stuff that you think is cool, and other people are going to like it. And one of my favorite stats about Blindside is for blind gamers, they finish it in general, right? All statistical distributions. But in general, we find they finish in about 45 minutes. And sighted gamers, it takes an hour and a half. So we think we're accurately simulating part of the experience of being blind. So your skills are transferable between navigating the real world and navigating this virtual world. Now, I have some really interesting news about it, which I don't know if you ran across. It was recently picked up by Radar Pictures, and the Soska sisters are adapting it into a feature film called Unseen.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Radar Pictures, too. They've done like Jumanji and things like this. So that was out of the blue. I mean, we wrote this almost 10 years ago. But yeah, that's been a fun experience, too.
That's an amazing story, and I appreciate you sharing that. So obviously a crucible moment and something that you shared and being honest about PTSD and the trauma you're going through. And for those that are listening, one, I kind of hear that you took this opportunity to kind of write some things down. So your uncle sharing this and says, hey, you know, capture this experience. And that's something that I think is important, because a lot of individuals that we've sat down with have talked about the importance of journaling or writing something down. I mean, just in the very beginning of starting on the journey of leadership across, you know, the profession of arms, what I offer to anybody that's starting this in the beginning is write down what you think good leadership is, write down what you think a good leader is or what they do. And then, and I did that when I was a cadet at West Point. And I look at that every time I leave an assignment, and I ask myself, do I still believe these things? You know, and if it does, you know, what's changed in that portion of it? Because we want to believe that, hey, we have the same friends, the same family, I haven't changed. But at that moment, at that time, well, you were writing, as I'm listening, Aaron, I mean, it was absolutely pure. And the fact that someone picked it up and then you were able to go through this journey absolutely sounds very cathartic as you were going through that process. And it sounds like all these other things now leading up to a movie called Unseen is going to be something that helps continue to keep you on that path of healing.
Yeah, yeah. And the one of the best things that came from that is I got to work with my friend Mike, right? We were like, you know, we played poker on Thursday nights in college. And, you know, we really reconnected over this. Really enjoyed working together, did some great work. And he is now our VP of product at Outlier.org and our first employee at the company. Okay. So we've gotten to apply our love of video games. And, you know, he brings a real element of fun. Sometimes my stuff's way too serious. And it's just been fantastic. You know, in your 20s, they always say not to work with your friends. And I think to your point, it's because you change. You change as a person. You grow. Like, I hope you change. One thing that I learned, especially in my 20s, was, you know, I should be embarrassed by the things I did 6 months ago. And if I'm not, I'm not growing fast enough. You know, and I've found as I get older, that timeline gets a little longer, but whew. That still happens. That's a good sign. It means you're learning, getting more empathetic, being more sensitive to people. And then when it comes to leadership style, and you bring up a really good point, which is I think there's all these constructs about what a good leader is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the second we say leader, people get this image in their head. And there are just so many different ways to lead. That's right. You know, it's been fantastic getting to meet a bunch of other founders as well, right? Like, I would like to believe, right? And this is one of those things where you got to check sometimes, is what you believe about yourself and who you actually are the same thing?
That's right.
So I'd like to believe I'm a very collaborative leader. You know, I trust my leadership team. You know, I think very deeply about their opinions. They certainly can sway me. I'm not coming up and saying, this is the way it is, we're doing it, let's go. Now that's one way of leading. And you'll get one type of team through that. But as I've met so many other founders too, you do find that there's just this incredible diversity in style of leadership.
Absolutely.
That I think, you know, I think that if somebody feels like they're not what they think of is the ideal of a leader, they should look around for other ideals of leaders and say, hey, you know, how'd they do that? Now, sometimes you have these one person leaders, right? So Tesla, for example, I mean, he's basically this eccentric doing these wild things. Yeah, he's not necessarily leading a team, but he is leading in thought and in innovation and in some pretty crazy death rays that he built in the back of his yard. If you ever want to look up some him catching on his neighbor's house on fire and things like that. So yeah, I would just, you know, I know this podcast is about leadership, and I know that this is something that, you know, is taught and is learned, sometimes not always the same, but in the armed forces. And, you know, I think that's fantastic, because the other thing that I should point out is don't be afraid if you are comfortable having somebody tell you what to do. That doesn't mean you're a bad leader. It doesn't mean you're bad at what you do. It doesn't mean any of those things. We're just all in different spots at different times.
Yeah.
And it's to your point, like somebody joins up and they got to see how to dress. They got to see what to do. If I, you know, I learned scuba diving, right? Took a year off and I got to travel the world. I feel very, very lucky. I don't want to lead when it comes to scuba diving. I don't know what I'm doing, right? I want somebody else to lead me. And that does not reflect poorly on me. That just means that I don't want nitrogen narcosis or whatever.
that's a good point, right? So, you know, the things that you bring up. So for us, you know, our own structure, I always kind of offer to the team, you know, concepts, paradigms, models are all flawed at some aspects. Some will work. And then for us, the, you know, leadership development model that they lay out for us is think about it in three domains. You have this institutional, what you're going to get from the schoolhouse, a professional military education. You have the operational, the experience that you have, you know, working in different assignments and the different leaders and the problem sets and the training that you do and the exercises. And the third one is the self, which is what I'm, you know, I'm incredibly interested in, which is, you know, the reason why I was attracted to Masterclass and what you're doing with Outlier.org. And this is about the pursuit, even just kind of what we're doing here in this podcast and then having this conversation. But, you know, even though our worlds may seem very, very different, the challenges are still very similar in the sense that you have to find to be the leader the organization needs, not necessarily the leader you want to be. So in order to do that, right, it kind of goes back to your scuba diving analogy. if I know I'm not very good at this, right, that goes back to my understanding myself and my increased self-awareness. And at the same time, I have to understand and have some awareness of my team's strengths and weaknesses. And a lot of times I think it's natural for us to pick individuals or select individuals to be part of our team that think like us, act like us, you know, and kind of go through that portion of it. But I do, as you mentioned, right, if you are not that type of individual, when you look up and you see a different type of leader, then go find something that's different. I think there's something to be said is, you know, look for those with a different diversity of thought that are going to see things, that are going to challenge ideas. And that's one of the things that I was kind of impressed. I read something that, you know, when they talk about Aaron Rasmussen, it's kind of this spectrum of, you know, innovator, creative, to like mad scientist, you know, and all these things that you have. But, you know, when you cast the net and you get into video games, you're talking about online platforms for education, you're talking about robotics. I mean, it is a passion for a lot of different things. And every groups that you're a part of, you will. And I think the more and more you're trying to become a student of your profession, which in our case, and what we're talking about is leadership, you will find ways to make the impacts in the passion projects of the things that you want to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, very well said on that. I think to the point that sort of what we're doing might look a little different, but leadership is very similar in many ways. I totally agree. It's all just people, right? Like this is the amazing thing about humans. We can organize people. We can get together. We can believe in the same thing and drive toward it and then accomplish extraordinary things. And, you know, I don't see any of the deer out here in Washington State doing that together. So it's something that's very special about us. And it's funny because I talked to computer scientists about this. You know, yeah, you got to learn how to program a computer. But if you want to accomplish big things, learn how to work with people. And it's all different types of people. You know, it's like I've been so lucky to be involved in such a weird, disparate array of pursuits, you know, from robotics to video games to beverages at an energy drink company to just – you know, the online education and all my other strange passion projects. Recently, it's been TikTok. I printed a fractal to talk about math trauma. And what's amazing is you get to meet other people who are passionate about the same things as you. And those people might seem so different from you, but you love the same thing in the same way. And it's just that instant great connection. And I love that. Like, nothing beats being able to spend time with people that just love the same weird things that you do, you know?
I think that's it's interesting, right? Because a lot of times being computer scientists, working robotics, doing some of these projects that you just have this innate talent or ability and your passion for, a lot of times you're still coming back to the same theme, and not everybody recognizes it, that the things that make you successful and then it's enjoyable on the journey that you're doing, it's because about people. And, you know, our recent, you know, our senior leadership has emphasized that mantra of people first, you know, and as you walk down and you kind of nest through this entire portion, what we would offer to the team here is, you know, serving on this team here within, you know, the Lancer Brigade, it's about a team of teams, right? That's committed to winning, dedicated to the pursuit of excellence. And you kind of said, walk all the way up through this portion of it, how that nested all our leadership and at every level, it comes back to the very simple mantra that's being communicated by our leaders, people first. So, you know, listen to somebody that's in a different craft, you know, that is talking about robotics and all these other things, but still coming to the same conclusion about it. It's pretty interesting and it's pretty neat to see, because you see the things that on the journey of those that are with you. And you know, what we're talking about, diversity of thought and some other things, those individuals that don't necessarily see the perspectives very similar to you will be the ones that will identify blind spots, will be the ones that will help you, you know, that take something that may not be the creative, but it will be able to take an idea and look for another way to apply it. And they'll be the innovators in something that you'd come up with originally, but they found a better way to apply that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you hire a bunch of people that think the same way you do, it's like, what are you doing? You already think the way you do. You already believe that. Find the people who think differently from you, and then, you know, make sure that you have a trusting relationship. So
absolutely,
if they say something that you're just like, well, no, that's thanks for offering up that idea, but you know, maybe there's additional piece of information you know that makes that impossible, or it's just too wild. And I'm a big fan of trying to be supportive of those wild ideas, because God, you hear just some of the best things from that you never would have thought of. And you realize that, you know, as a team, it's kind of the classic thing that the sum is greater than the addition of the parts. You really do look at a project, you know, and this is from film editing to robot, whatever. You're like, this is better than I could have done alone.
Absolutely.
If I had 5 years working alone, it still wouldn't be as good as this 1 year working with four other people.
Absolutely.
And that there's some sort of magic there. I have a question. I should have looked this up. What do the Lancers do?
So we're a striker brigade. So we're an organization of about 4,500 soldiers, comprised of 7 battalions. So 3 infantry battalions. We've got an engineer battalion. We've got a support battalion, so a bunch of logistics specialties. We've got a field artillery battalion, right? And then we've got a CAV or reconnaissance squadron. So we're the military's, in the sense, you know, brigade combat team that can be employed with a higher headquarters at the division level, so a 2-star. And then we are responsible, as things are shaped on the battlefield in large-scale combat operations. We're the entity or the size of the organization that needs to be prepared for the crucible of ground combat.
Wow. It sounds almost fully self-sufficient battalion. They can just simply be deployed.
Absolutely.
And this is me just, I really should probably just Google this, but what is CAV RIDE now? Being that, isn't that?
What is
it? Yeah, it's cavalry, right? You were mentioning. So is that Humvees and these sorts of things?
No, that's a great question. And so for all my soldiers that are CAV scouts, you know, so they're going to be interested. They're like, wow, out of all the things he was most important, you know, he was interested in the CAV. So yeah, they still wear Stetsons, right? So they tie back to their lineage for ceremonial, you know, pieces of that. So obviously, you know, originated on horse, you know, for scouting purposes. And it depends on the type of the organization. So on the type of the brigade combat team. So on an infantry brigade combat team that's light, there's no vehicles. But if it's, they do have Humvees that are mounted that have heavy machine guns that are on those platforms of it. If you're in an armor brigade, it's going to have, you know, some tracked vehicles. Here in a striker brigade, they have strikers. So in our brigade, we have, you know, over 20 different variants of strikers. So in a CAV squadron, they have, you know, both a striker variant, and then they have something that would look similar to, you know, an anti-armor vehicle or a small kind of tank, which we call mobile gun system. But yeah, to answer your question, is they ride strikers like everybody else, not just horse.
Got it. Horses. Got it. Hey, the Stetsons though, I learned that. That's new for me here for sure. You know, I know I got to run pretty soon, but I would love to hear, what's the last kind of leadership insight that you've heard? I mean, this, you're getting to talk to leaders all the time. You have tons of experience with leaders, you know, within the armed forces. What's kind of the last good thing that you heard?
I would say that I think that, you know, there's really two portions of it. Anytime that you have an opportunity where somebody's willing to share, be open and transparent, really about something that they had a shortcoming in, and then what they learn from it. And a lot of times it doesn't matter if you're talking to, you know, Ray Dalio, and he's referencing principles, right? And he's realizing, like, how does this individual go from, you know, all this success, you know, monetarily, and then it ends up going to the point where, you know, he has to go back and gain and request money from his own dad to keep his, you know, pay his own bills. And that's not something that anybody wants to broadcast, but to have the professional maturation to share that story and what you learned from that. You know, you talk to Ryan Holiday and he talks about, you know, the obstacle is the way. Sometimes you see a boulder inside and everybody wants to walk around it. until one individual realizes by trying to go over there and lift that boulder, there's actually this sack of gold that's underneath it. Sometimes we don't recognize, you know, why we're going through these things, but we recognize afterwards that that was part of the process that made us better. And it's those that are surrounding you. So one, I would say it's, hey, those that are willing to share their shortcomings and their failures and be open and transparent are the ones that I think more people are going to be willing to draw into, because it's this thing called trust. You know, if somebody is willing to show that, hey, I am human, if somebody's willing to show, here are the things that I went through that were pretty difficult. It's not just all the scary badges you're wearing. It's not about all these deployments I've been on. Here are the things that I struggle with professionally and personally. And we've had several guests that have shared those kind of things. The second thing is that I thought was great was individuals that talk about going through a difficult time, whether it's leadership in crisis or it's a personal challenge. It's about understanding this growth mindset. And so it's what we talk about a lot of times, and Angela Duckworth has written about it. It's called grit. And it's going through these stages. So it's, you know, as you've mentioned, it doesn't matter if I'm talking to an athlete. It doesn't matter if I'm talking to somebody that went through some personal trauma, even something that you mentioned, you know, when you talked about the chemistry, you know, incident or accident. And you walk through this portion of this, it's going through these stages about finding interest, fueling this passion, finding out what your purpose is, and then multiple focused reps is going through this, and then just having this ability to just, when you know you're going to fall short of something, that you're going to continue to pick up and continue to go. So I think being open and transparent, especially on your failures, and understanding, number two, hey, this is the ability to have this mindset growth, because failure is inevitable. And really the third thing that's most important is about how do you build this network, which is your net worth. Surround yourself by people and resources that are going to encourage you. When you especially have some challenges, as I tell my son, don't surround yourself by a bunch of joy thieves. I think those three things have been the most consistent and resounding messages that I've heard just talking to all different types of individuals and within their craft that have been pretty impressive how they have laid that out and told it in several different stories. And the last thing, that all kind of resolves around one thing, which in our profession, and really in it's any profession of leadership, it's this currency called trust. And in the profession of arms, we have this responsibility to build trust within our organization, but we also have this fiduciary responsibility to build trust with the American people. And I think, you know, those three things, and then understanding, just as you mentioned, how when you build this team that you can trust, and then it's not disagreement is disloyalty. You want people to disagree. You want them to challenge, because you trust that, hey, we're all moving toward the same end state. That's what I'd offer.
That is an incredible summary. I wholeheartedly agree with so much of that. You know, I took me a long time to figure out that the goal isn't to avoid setbacks, right? Those are just going to happen. The skill that you're building is getting back up and continuing.
Right.
And it's like that took me a long time to figure out, you know, especially coming from kind of this perfectionist mindset where you don't want to make a mistake. It's like, well, there's an easy way to not make a mistake, which is never try anything.
That's exactly right.
If you want to accomplish stuff, you got to be out there. You got to be doing it. Don't make the same mistake twice. That's ridiculous.
That's right.
But yeah, continue to go. And then it's so wild. You know, I was thinking about this recently, that it's so different if somebody does something and you trust them, right? You think about a family member and they do something that seems ridiculous. And you're just like, I'm sure they had a good reason for that, right? You're just like, you trust, well, at least with my family members, this isn't the most universal thing, trust my family a lot. You know, if they do something, I'm just waiting to hear why.
That's exactly right.
But if you don't trust that person, you're like, what are you doing? That's insane. You don't even wait for the explanation. And that's, you know, that's an important currency. Hey, it was fantastic chatting with you. Thank you so much for reaching out and having me on. I love that you guys are local here. I'm in Washington State myself, so not too far away. Yeah.
I think that, you know, for the our listeners, we always leave them with what are your questions, and I'd like to leave the final word with you.
Ooh, what are their questions? What does that mean? Let me.
That's a little tagline that we have as people are listening to this, because we want them to continue to be curious about the conversation that we're having. And so a lot of times when they'll listen to what we're talking about, they'll ask, hey, here's somebody that I'd like to follow up. This is the things that I gleaned from. Here's the things that I think I can apply. Here's who I think would be recommended as a great follow-up guest, or the next time where Mr. Rasmussen could come in person to visit the Lancer Brigade and we could sit down and we could have a follow-up session.
Oh, yeah. So people that I would want to learn from, there are just so many. I mean, the masterclass roster is actually a pretty decent list right there. But something that I'd leave with it is, you know, if you don't have direct access to someone, there are great books, and learning to get knowledge from that crystallized source that is a book. You know, there's no great secret to gaining experience and insight. It's you read a ton. Now, eventually you have to do stuff, but there's so many great resources out there. And of course my mind is immediately blank when I think about it. I don't read a lot of leadership books. I do like to read to understand other people's perspectives. That's really what I'm looking for, is trying on somebody else's mind and understanding, you know, trying to understand what it looks like from the inside.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Aaron, thanks for sitting down and talking with us. Really enjoyed the conversation today.
Absolutely. Likewise. Have a good one.
Yeah. Take care of yourself.
Thank you for listening to The Leadership Experience. If you like what you heard, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to keep up to date with the newest podcasts. The Leadership Experience will showcase professionals within five different subseries. Number one, Masters of Our Craft, The Essence of Warfighting. Number two, Students of Our Profession, as we understand organizational culture and concepts of leadership. Number three, Professional Athletes with Guns, as we talk hardships and maintaining a competitive advantage. Number four, Grit and Resiliency, the ability to overcome and perform under pressure. And number five, Safe and Secure Environment, as we talk soldier well-being and building trust within our organization and the profession as whole.